Akron, Ohio. This is episode 185 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are talking about the trope anti-villain and our top five favorite anti-villains. But first, as always, I am your host, Nick. And today I'm joined by...
Sir.
Demo.
And Kyle.
So this was a trope that was recommended by co-host Eva. So, sir, what is an anti-villain?
So, from my understanding, it is a... And this isn't off the TVTropes.org website, so... however, it's essentially a villain who is like is motivated by things that are positive and that kind of, you know, you sympathize with. Kind of, you know, so not just a villain that's cool, you know, it has to be a villain that like maybe they're maybe what's driving them is actually like kind of the right thing or
To me, the kind of like writing background of this is a anti-hero is a hero that is made to be somewhat less clean, and an anti-villain is a villain that's made to be slightly less dirty. Whether that's they have a good goal in mind, but their means of getting there are maybe troubled or violent or wrong, or they're likable for some reason. It's just they're not a pure villain. They're not Palpatine. They're... I should not have used a Star Wars. Maybe Darth Vader? I don't know.
Darth Vader said... He said anti-villain.
Should he use something that I knew better than Star Wars to go with that?
Well, Palpatine's is a straight-up villain.
He's a straight-up villain. Adam Driver, whatever his character's name. Kind of an anti-villain.
Maybe.
Right.
What is his name?
Kylo Ren.
Kylo Ren. Shirtless guy?
Oh, okay.
It's probably Mark Vader.
Darth Vader's an anti-villain.
Than Kylo Ren.
In a way.
I think he was...
From the prequels.
From the prequels, yeah.
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 But at the end, too. I mean, spoilers, but...
I don't think so.
I mean, he's a pup.
I feel like that's the thing.
Maybe he just wants his own kid to take over the Empire. I mean, we attribute a lot of goodwill to Darth Vader at that scene.
I don't.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
When he kills Palpatine.
I didn't think of it that way.
I'm sure there's also a subtrope of this where it's just like he was a puppet the whole time in a way where like there was a bigger bad that was actually...
What if he was a puppet like in Team America though? Like he was an actual
literal puppet? I want to see that.
Man. You haven't seen it yet?
No.
Him is a puppet. Oh,
I feel like I've yet to see that movie all the way through. I fall asleep.
Team America?
Yeah.
I think I've only seen the first half multiple times.
Yeah. Team America's awesome.
It's good.
Do you guys just want to jump into our top five?
Sure.
Yeah. Let's do it. That'd be cool.
Kyle, what's your number five?
My number five is a really good example of the tragic villain subtrope, and it is the Beauty and the Beast unit from Metal Gear Solid 4. I don't know if either of you guys have played that one. Basically, it's a unit of made of four female soldiers who go by the name Crying Wolf, Raging Raven, Screaming Mantis, and Laughing Octopus. And they all, when they were younger, suffered like horrible PTSD and were hired by PMCs and were like tortured and driven by fear to do these like really horrible things. And they turned into these really bad villains in the game, but... from like how they started out and what created them is like a really tragic story. And basically when you kill or like when you take them down in the game, this one side character tells you their backstory, and it like is just
after a couple of them,
you're like, do I really have to take this person out? Like, I know they're really terrible, but their backstory is just so sad. Like what they are forced to do sometimes. And it's really dark.
It's a bummer.
Yeah. So, it's less like they're not fighting for good. But what created them is very tragic, and you feel for them, afterwards. So Thema would be your number five.
Making my list for the second week in a row, M. Night Shyamalan. With this time with Mr. Glass character from Unbreakable, who is he's a guy who's just trying to find his place in the world. Mm-hmm. Why am I here? What, you know? Why am I this way? And in that search for just the same search that we're all on at some point in our life or another, he goes about in really awful means. And, yeah, I haven't seen Glass yet.
I was just going to ask you if you'd seen it.
No, I really
I know a lot of people that were excited about it, but I heard it was not. Yeah,
the reviews I've seen have been really bad.
Which I don't know that we could have expected.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a sequel. So any sequel that takes that long.
Has he done any sequels before?
I don't think so. I guess Split is technically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of. It felt
Emily
retroactive
was,
to me.
Emily was all right.
It was all right.
I don't like the reviews.
It was. Honestly, like the storyline was meh, but the what carried it was that the acting was so strong from
McAvoy.
Yeah, I was gonna say Professor Xavier, but your number five.
So my number five, and I'm gonna keep putting him on any list like this until they make a movie about him, or at least give us like a gritty, you know, R-rated animated movie. So Black Manta, Aquaman villain, and so basically he has. A kind of a hidden origin. Basically, at first, you think he's just in his first early appearances, he's just sent in for crime, and then he tells Aquaman that he is trying to create an undersea city and empire and civilization for black people because we're oppressed on the surface, which I think is just like one of the coolest ideas ever. And of course, DC backed off of it and said that he was just lying about that and was just trying to trick Aquaman. So they didn't really have the cojones, I guess, and to use a an old school problematic term. so yeah, until we actually get a great Black Manta film, then I'm gonna keep putting him on my lists. DC, if you're listening, Nick, what is your number five?
My number five is Wilson Fisk from Into the Spider-Verse, which was played by Leo Schreiber, and he's almost entirely just a regular villain, but his,
despite taking up half the screen whenever he's on screen,
he's a gigantic character, but his motivation I think is respectable. Would you be willing to risk destroying the entire universe to bring back his dead wife and child? And yeah, I get it.
Wow. And he mostly just stops anything that tries to stop him. He doesn't.
Yeah, he's not going
hunt
out
down
of his way
Spider-Man.
To, yeah, he's not going out of his way to do crimes. He's just doing his own crime.
Yeah,
I think
I get it.
That movie might show up again.
Okay,
in this episode.
Oh, all right.
Nice.
Anyways, I get it. I'd probably be willing to risk the universe imploding too. Wow. So.
I hope they don't put that choice to me.
Yes. Yeah. Because I'm pushing that button or whatever it was.
This is why I don't date. Because next thing you know, you're destroying
the universe.
Yeah.
Well said.
I'm bringing that spider ham out. Kyle, what is your number four?
I hope I'm not stepping on your list, sir, but Dutch Vanderlyn is... I consider him an anti-villain, mostly because he puts his family and his group of cohorts above everything else, but the way he handles some things, it's not ideal. I don't want to go into spoilers just because it is a very new game, but you do see similar things with him as you've seen with some of the big supervillains in these Marvel movies lately, where... Mm. He is charismatic and he's loving, but he goes about everything the wrong way.
And he also has like progressive ideals and motivations. Like he's in his mind pushing for something better than that.
And he's also like very paranoid. Thinks everyone's like he thinks that anyone is not thinking the same way he is, he turns on them. And he's very hot-headed, but. He's ultimately a very interesting character in that game. Red Dead Redemption 2. That would be your number four.
This might be... Yeah. First time I've, this is the first guy that came to my mind, and it's Dracula, specifically from Bram Stoker's Dracula, in so much that this is somebody who is killing because he's a vampire and he's hungry. He's doing all this stuff because he's trying to find a lost love. I love that that juxtaposition with this whole trope, really. This whole juxtaposition of like, oh yeah, totally get where you're coming from. If we could go about it in a different way, but totally get where you're coming from. Love it. Sir, you're number four.
So my number four, I'm going to go with the Prowler from Into the Spider-Verse, just to kind of keep that going. I think his relationship with Miles Morales is like, you can see that he's a really genuine kind of human person, mm-hmm. and it seems like his main motivation is just money. And not money in that he's trying to amass some fortune or anything. Like, he's literally, it's just a job to him. Which I think when we think about capitalism and having, you know, how we have to find jobs to sustain ourselves, to get shelter, clothing, all that stuff, it's really compelling to think of a guy that just, in his mind, he couldn't become a cop. This is just what he could do. And I think as a anti-villain, his motivations kind of become really apparent at the end of the movie, where he's just trying to protect his family. You know, yeah. He makes the choice that's more important than what he was doing. So I didn't know if it quite entirely added up yet. In my mind, I was like, the Prowler fits.
Yeah. And goodness gravy, but the music that plays whenever he's on screen might be some of like the greatest. I don't even know. Like, it's music, but it's also just sound effects. And yeah. It's it's terrifying, but also badass.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about him as a hero or a character. Like, everyone's saying how it's such a great portrayal of the Prowler.
I only knew, like, I don't even think I read any issues. I just knew of the character, and so this is the first real.
But he's always been related to Miles.
I think he was actually around before Morales, so I think they kind of retconned
interesting
some connections.
Yeah, I mean, the music in that movie overall is incredible, but his like themes are amazing.
They're really good. Nick, what's your number four?
My number four is, we're kind of stretching this definition as far as it goes, because the character is not sympathetic, but it's one of those things where if you can get into his mindset, you get why he would do something like this. And it is Jake Busey's character in Contact.
Oh.
Jake Busey.
Jake Busey.
I was flirting with cults, too.
So he's a religious.
Let me rephrase.
Yeah.
I was in real life? With adding cults to my list as well. Yeah.
So he's a religious fanatic, basically in Contact. Aliens or some extraterrestrial force has given humans instructions to build a machine that's going to take you somewhere, it seems. And some people think that might be a bad idea because things could go wrong. And I get it. Suicide bombing, probably not the best way to stop. I mean, it temporarily worked, but not the rightest way to stop that from happening. Not the best ethical way to stop that from happening. But you get where, if you assume that maybe like the world will end, maybe you think it's your duty to do it. I can see that rationale, but he is also a terrorist. I think this is similar to Arrival. People have a similar reaction to the aliens in that movie, and go to extreme measures that are probably misguided or were misguided, I guess.
Yeah.
We know that they were misguided. But it's a similar mindset. Like if you get that embedded into something, you still maintain a little bit of a sympathetic, undertone to the character just because they're wrong, but at least they have their convictions, as incorrect as they may be. Kyle, what is your number three?
Number three is just the Colossi and Shadow of the Colossus. In that game, you play as a character that just goes by the name Wander, and you make a deal with this dark entity named Dorman to slay these Colossi in order to revive a loved one. And when you play the game, you picture them as these just over the top bosses that are terrorizing everything. But once you take one out for the first time, you realize that they're kind of just minding their own business. And of course, you'd need to kill them all to beat the game, and you realize like what is actually going on in the game. But they're these just giant building-sized creatures, most of them, and they're not really that evil. They're just minding their own business, and there's a lot of other things going on in the game that I don't want to spoil, but yeah, it's sad. And I know some people that have played, like, started playing the game, and then once you've realized like what you need to do, they stop because like really? They feel bad. They feel bad for these things because they're just they're not doing anything horrible. They're not like Godzilla, like going over buildings or anything. They're just minding their own business. But you have to take them out to beat the game.
That's
but,
really powerful. Yeah, that's yeah, powerful storytelling.
It's yeah. It's a great game, that's and awesome. There's yeah, it's so simple because that's all the game is. It's just taking these things out. There's not like other story to it. So it's cool. That's my number three. Themo, what's your number three?
My number three is Shamu from SeaWorld. I might be anthropomorphizing a bit, but these noble animals with a lot of community and
named after killers.
Aimed,
well, the species is, yeah.
But they're taken from the open ocean and put into this confined area where they're essentially, I mean, you could say it abused as in so much as that they're completely taken out of a natural environment. Mm-hmm. And
they're put in a cell. I mean, that's not enough yeah. space for them at all.
And on top of that, they'll be put in a cell together. So if there's a runt or somebody smaller, they'll just be torn up, and this is documented in Blackfish. And then, on top of that, they're made to perform, and even though these movements are allegedly, you know, seen in the wild, it's still not under these conditions with in a stadium seating mm-hmm. in front of people screaming at them. I don't know. So when you see these animals kill, it's I don't know. My takeaway from Blackfish was, we need to put down that whale, and it's also very sad. So, because I don't think that you could put this thing that was raised in captivity and traumatized back into the wild with it having any kind of chance of survival. So, I know it's not really groundbreaking to say, yeah, what we did to those whales is wrong, but just the same, it was. I don't know.
SeaWorld sucks.
SeaWorld sucks.
I mean, the takeaway. You know, yeah. We can say that because it's yeah. just clearly bad.
Well, it's kind of heartbreaking because when I was little, like that was, we would go there all the time. Yeah. You know, not all the time, but we would go there, you know, somewhat every couple of years or whatever. And I don't know. So it's like this weird thing where the nostalgia is over here, but the rational mind's over here. And there's like this, I don't know. Has anyone else ever?
Well, it's kind of like that episode of Golden Palace. The sequel of Golden Girls, where the Confederate women of America come in, and like they kind of have to make this decision.
What are
like,
you saying? Wow. Yeah, yeah. A sequel to Golden Girls?
Yeah, with Don Cheadle. It's real. Don it's real. Cheadle? Yeah, and there's this episode where it's like the daughters of the Confederacy are there, and you know Blanche has to make a decision. She's like, I've got how I grew up. She's like, yeah, that wasn't the same way to everybody. Those mm-hmm. things were harmful to other people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Golden Palace. Check it out, listeners. It's on YouTube. Don Cheadle is in it.
Oh, that's wild. What's your number three?
So my number three is I'm gonna go with Benny.
Benny in the whatever you're talking about.
Benny, the coolest hood in the city of God. Because man, was that guy cool?
He was. He was so cool.
Like even if he didn't have decent motivations. Or, like, was sympathetic or anything. He was the coolest hood in the City of God.
He's, so, like, a nice guy. He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. And I think his character says everything about what the movie is about. That, like, children shouldn't be in this situation. Yeah. Like, people shouldn't be in these slums, in these ghettos. And when they are, sometimes crime is essentially, like, their only avenue. Like, that's the only thing they can do. And I think Benny being such a lot of the characters were actually like really just down to earth regular kids that are in this horrible situation in these favelas, and I think Benny just really, it's such a lasting character. It's such a great kind of in such a movie, in a movie filled with such great characters.
If we ever do like a best movie hair list, how's Benny not like top three?
He's gotta be. He's gotta be.
That hair so glorious.
Like real, like curly, but then he dyes it, so yeah, it's like golden
blonde. Yeah,
yeah. And listeners, if you haven't seen City of God, I mean, I rank it as the best film of our time.
I think it won
a trophy, right?
It won on our old show when we did best movies made in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. It had accrued the most points.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you had it as number one. I had it as number two.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I probably didn't even have it. Because I hadn't seen it.
That movie. It's so great.
It's so good.
Nick, what is your number three?
My number three, last week we talked about Election. This is another Alexander Payne movie called The Descendants. It was nominated for Best Picture like 6-7 years ago, maybe. And George Clooney plays a guy whose wife is dying in a coma. And then they have a couple kids. The older daughter is played by Shailene Woodley. And the antagonist in this isn't really a villain, but he antagonizes George Clooney and Shailene Woodley. So it's his father-in-law. So the father of the daughter who's in a coma and grandfather to the girl. And he's just really nasty to the two of them, saying like, you're a bad daughter and you're a bad husband. And if you would have done this differently, maybe she wouldn't have gotten in an accident. And he's just like awful to both of them. But there's a scene later when he's like at her bed when it's become evident that she's not going to get any better. And you do gain sympathy for this guy where maybe he is an asshole, but also he's going through it. So even if he's baseline, it seems like he's probably baseline an asshole. You have to cut him. Mm-hmm. Like you got to cut him some slack. Come on. So anyways, it's another one of his movies where, like you were saying, he does a lot of kind of like Midwest type things. This has a real similar vibe, only it takes place in Hawaii and it's a bunch of rich people.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I talked about it a lot in the last episode. Yet, just to elaborate, Midwestern is in like culturally Midwestern, this very repressed, because I feel like some listeners who don't live here might not know what we're saying.
Yeah,
it's like a very kind of just repressed and kind of outwardly like appearance over internal feelings sometimes, like things like that tend to happen around here where it's like, you know, you will have a lot of family stuff or you know, something like that, that like you know, you're kind of maintaining this level of kind of appearance, I guess, and I'm sure that's everywhere. I just think that it is kind of a trope of the heartland,
So this has a similar vibe, only the location is different and the class of the people in it is different, but it's interesting. Like it's an interesting, like switch from his usual, not medium, but kind of the arena
setting.
Yeah. The usual setting.
That's one of his few movies I actually haven't seen.
I hadn't seen it until a couple weeks ago. It's good. It's not, I think something like Election is much better. And I think I even like Nebraska more than this. Hmm. Kyle, what is your number two?
Number two is Lotso Huggenbear from Toy Story 3. I was I thought about putting Stinky Pete on mine, but
I like Lotso Huggenbear. They're a really similar character.
They are,
but I like Lotso better.
Lotso, Stinky Pete didn't even have a backstory. He's just
a tyrant.
Didn't get any attention. Lotso Huggenbear had almost like this Jesse backstory where he had a family and was loved, and he was forgotten, and he made the trek home and was replaced. And I feel like I don't know if they go into that too often in Toy Story overall, but just like, I don't know if the next movie is going to have multiple Woodies or whatever, but like the fact that he was just so easily replaced and was broken up by it, it was just, and it drove him to who he is really tragic. But
it's one of my favorite Pixar vocal performances. Is Ned Beatty is lots of
yeah. There. It's a like a really good cast for that role.
Yeah, it's perfect.
But yeah, it was I just rewatched that the whole backstory scene the other day, and it's still like really emotional. I'm kind of glad that they don't do that too often. Like, there were multiple buzzes in that episode or in that movie, but overall they don't like have multiple characters that are like in a universe where Buzz was, or Woody was one of the most popular toys, and you don't run into multiple of him, and Andy doesn't get a second Woody. But yeah, it's
are they doing that with the fourth?
No, the fourth one's mostly is just about a spork, which is going to be like one of the most emotional things ever. That trailer got me. Like, a spork. Have you seen the trailers for the movie?
It's like Spoonie or something.
Yeah, no, the girl who takes it's. Is it the girl at the end of the fourth?
I don't know.
I think it is. I think it's the girl at the end of the third movie. She like makes this spork like with crafts and turns it into like a sentient toy. And she like loves him so much, and then he gets lost, and Woody has to like get them back. Jeez, but it's
I'm not ready for that.
Seeing some people on Twitter say like
every toy that I ever
like toys, his name is Forky. Yeah. That's Forky. Forky. Oh, and it's voiced by Tony Hill.
Oh no!
But people on Twitter that are like, if you would have told me that several years from now
you'll be crying over a toy over a plastic fork,
yeah, I'd be like, what are you talking about? But for sure, it's going to be so sad. Thamo, what's your number two?
My number two, you might say, is more human than human. I'm going with Roy Batty from Blade Runner, who is essentially just trying to, number one, live longer than he was programmed to. Mm. And number two, find safety for him and his family. Of other replicants, and I totally 120% get where he's coming from, and although would I murder to do it, I would like to think not, but who knows. I hope not. I can't imagine. I don't know, not if I had those abs. But no, I mean, like, joking aside, so he's going around, he's like not just murdering, he's also like torturing, and you get the feeling that a lot of his resentment towards what he is in terms of his time running out is being predicted during these like sessions where he's messing with people. But classic performance in a classic film. If you haven't seen Blade Runner, listener, see Blade Runner.
Go do it.
Can't give that. That's one of my all-time favorite movies.
Same.
Sir, your number two.
So my number two is Jillian from Boardwalk Empire. And this is I kind of have to talk around it. I'm trying to think of her last name and her character's last name.
Jillian Anderson.
Jillian Anderson from Boardwalk Empire.
Wait, is that real? That's the
no,
the actress from The X-Files.
You got me. Well,
that's good.
Without
Jillian Darmody?
Yes, Jillian Darmody. Without really spoiling it, essentially she plays. It's a play on the trope of like the like Ma Barker, like the crime kind of mistress and kind of the crime mother, and it's a story that like by the end of the series, I mean, essentially so many things that go wrong in the story for characters do kind of lead back to her and like lead back to decisions she made. She starts out as kind of like a showgirl, she becomes a madam. She really encourages her son to like just be this brutal crime leader and try to take over Naki's empire, and it really like you're watching it like, man, she's just like a Cersei level villain. And it takes like, Dick, did you watch it all the way through to the end?
I only watched the pilot.
Man, if you guys stick with it and you watch the entire thing, she's one of the most effective anti-villains like I've ever seen, read, anything. Like, by the end of it, you're like, oh, okay, that's why that happened. And it's really not her fault. Like, it's legitimately not her fault. And it's actually because of... I mean, it kind of reminded me of some of the stuff you were saying, Kyle, about the villains from Metal Gear. Like, it makes sense, and everything kind of adds up to why she did that stuff. Yet, without spoiling it, it's hard to kind of... talk about it.
Yeah.
Jillian Darmody is, you know, as bad as she might seem in that first season, listeners, like, keep watching it. It's That's good. Nick, what's your number two?
My number two is the Joaquin Phoenix character in the movie The Immigrant from a few years ago. Mm. So he's not a good person at all. Basically, he like preys on immigrants who are coming over. He lives like just off of Ellis Island, I'm guessing. So he comes across Marion Cotillard's character, who's coming from Poland, and basically rigs it so that she's kind of left without a place to stay. So he sort of takes her in, and she gets forced into a life of prostitution. So he's a jerk, but through the movie, he ends up earning just a little bit of redemption. And part of that is he deserves bad things to have happen to him. And some bad things do happen to him, but it's because he's trying to do something good for once. And it's just a really interesting kind of twist on that character, who when he's doing terrible things, everything goes his way. And then when he finally tries to do something good, things go against him. And part of the other reason that I think this works in the movie is that he doesn't forgive himself. He's aware of how bad he is, and he owns up to it. But he still holds it against himself for doing these things. So I think it works much better than, say, the redemption arc in Three Billboards. Like, the Sam Rockwell character doesn't really work because that character just didn't go very far in terms of like feeling bad for the terrible things he did. Whereas this one, it really does pay off, and it doesn't try to get you to forgive him fully. It just tries to give you just a sliver of goodness or trying to be good underneath. So I think it worked really well for me. So that is Joaquin Phoenix in The Immigrant. That movie has an amazing final shot. It has like one of the coolest final shots. Half of it takes place in a mirror. It's awesome. Kyle, what is your number one?
My number one is Marlene and the Fireflies from The Last of Us. The ending of that game is really different, and it makes you wonder if you were playing the bad guy all along, just by how all the events unfold. And I think that's like the true like definition of this trope, where you're not sure if you are the bad guy or if the people that you think are the bad guy are the bad guy. And it's handled really well, and it doesn't beat you over the head with what the game thinks is happening. It just lets the player sort of decide.
That makes me want to play it.
Yeah, it's really awesome. It's a zombie apocalypse thing, and you think that these people are bad, and maybe they're bad, but maybe they're also doing the right thing, and it's awesome. That game's incredible, and the sequel's coming out hopefully in the next year or so. So
I've never played it, but I heard it's everything I've heard has been like,
yeah, it's amazing. That might actually be my favorite game of all time, just because of the story and everything, the universe. It's great. So that would be your number one.
My number one probably has the highest body count of anyone on my list, and is actually a real world example. And this is Jenny McCarthy, who
is pure villain,
violently ignorant.
Wow, that's awesome.
Pure villain.
And well, I don't think she's a pure villain. I think that she's coming from a very real place where she's trying to make sense of why did my child have autism, and why, you know?
I guess
so. She's
closer to the Jake Busey character than anyone else,
and she's also coming from a place of like reasonable. Maybe not in her community yet. There's a reasonable mistrust for some of the systems that we've had in some ways. I don't think from her it makes quite as much sense.
For sure. Yeah, we're not talking.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, just the idea that like systems may be corrupt or may not make or may have ulterior motives or whatever. I can get that. Yeah.
Sure.
Doesn't. I don't think that it excuses her actions or anything. There are no excuses. There are reasons for everything.
Yeah, and to that point, absolutely. There's blood on the hands of medicine over the past, and one of the period. One of the things that we've done right, though, has been vaccinations.
Yeah, it's like the best thing that we've done. Yeah. I say we, like we're like is fucking, it, you like and Jonas, were, yeah, me, you and Salk.
Yeah, we're plating shit. Yeah, no, no. So absolutely, there's reason for the mistrust, and I don't think any single one of the anti-vaxxing movement people are bad people. I just think that we have to answer for the body count that we've created by mm-hmm.
Well, that they've created. Anti-vaxxing is a cult. It's, yeah. I can't think of any other really, way to put it.
Yeah,
that's legitimate. Yeah. What other? It fits all the
yeah
all the things.
But that was my number one.
It's a good number one.
Yeah, it's a higher body count than.
That's a solid number one.
Maybe not Wilson Fisk. I don't know. We don't know what happened with the multiverse, but
that's true. Right.
It's or certainly a higher body count than my number one.
What's what your is number one?
You guys already know.
Oh yeah.
Oh nice.
It's Killmonger.
Yeah.
We can figure out how many.
He does have a lot of tattoos.
Yeah, because it's all the bumps.
Scars.
Yeah.
Scars. You just count every
scars,
bump.
Not tattoos.
Yeah. He's actually got a pretty high body count. Yeah. It's not quite, you know, to that level. Yeah. Yeah. Killmonger. I mean, if you saw Black Panther, listeners, you know why. If you listened to a lot of the episodes of our show in the past year, then you probably know why. So.
Yeah.
Sure. Still really effective. Really holds up. My daughter went on a thing where she was watching it. She watched it every day for probably like 3 weeks straight.
Jeez. So,
not quite
Mallrats
to Mallrats level. Nick's yeah. Mallrats summer. Yeah. Which we refer to as the summer of the rats.
Summers.
Goodness.
Yeah. It's just, you know, great character. Greatest Disney film.
Are you saying Disney he's film. Why she watched it?
No, yeah. Just that, you know, I've
the movie
seen
overall
it. I've ended up seeing it a lot because of that. Yeah. So, yeah, it just holds up. Yeah, every viewing is good. Greatest Disney villain of all time. All time.
So you're including Marvel with Disney now?
Well, I kind of have to because of, you know, they own everything.
Yeah. I know, that's my point.
I think I'm going to get sued if... Yet even in that, it's the greatest, easily the greatest Marvel on-screen.
That's what I'm saying, hands down, yeah.
Hands down, Marvel on-screen. And probably, I'd argue, being like a lifelong Marvel fan, Marvel reader, yeah, he's probably the greatest villain that Marvel's ever produced. I can't think of a better one.
For the movies, anyway.
He doesn't, I didn't even think for the comics.
I mean, well, I can't speak to the comics, but for the movies, for sure.
He doesn't really compare to Killmonger, but would you guys say Thanos is also kind of an anti-villain?
Yeah, for sure.
His motivations?
I think the problem with Thanos is, like, maybe on screen he's a little different, yet in the comics, Thanos is not, like, that positive of a character.
Yeah,
like,
in the movies.
In the movie, maybe.
He has a good idea. It's, I mean...
Kind of messed up,
in the comics, though, he does eventually get to that characterization, yet he starts with he's just power hungry.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I never read the.
Yeah, the he like kills though, yeah. like his entire race of people. And it's kind of just because. Like, he's not really. He's pretty sociopathic in the comics.
Not cool, Thanos.
Yeah, seriously, get it together.
Not cool.
Have you guys heard about this new movie with him in it called Avengers Endgame?
A couple people are talking about it.
Yeah.
I hope, I mean, I'm sure the Oscars are going to do it, but they have to make a joke about the spoiler thing, like how, don't spoil it. Like, how many movies are going to start doing that now?
We just have to get over spoilers.
Yeah, like, why did they feel the need to be like, don't spoil the movie, don't spoil the movie.
Or
like,
just don't get on Twitter.
Yeah. Like,
that's what I do.
Don't have horrible friends.
Yeah, don't read it, don't.
Yeah. You know. Don't have horrible friends or follow horrible people. Yeah. Right.
Like that.
I just muted a bunch of words on Twitter till I saw it.
I didn't know you could even do that.
Yeah, you can mute words.
I don't know.
I don't do it enough. It's a good idea too. There's a lot of stuff that you're just like, I don't need to see it.
Right.
But yeah, so I muted like Endgame, hashtag Endgame, Avengers Endgame, etc.
I mean, smart. I think that there should be intermissions. We need to bring back intermissions.
I think
because like I heard there's an app that allows that like. Tells you when to go to the bathroom.
Which is I don't ridiculous. Know how much I like about
I 100% don't like it because the filmmaker has made a movie.
I was going to say, that's just saying that the scene is a throwaway
it's
not scene.
Important. Like, that's horrible. It's a horrible idea.
I like your idea because I know for me, mm-hmm. I'm just, this is growing old. I don't know what's happening. but I have to pee.
Yeah. You know, well so from what movie, I understand, you are human.
Is that movie so. 3 hours long?
It's just over 3 hours long. I had a couple cups of coffee in the morning and didn't drink anything after like noon and ate a bunch of popcorn to salt up during the movie, so yeah. I was fine. But usually I have to pee during a movie in like short movies.
Yeah.
When you were talking about that 3 hour movie last episode or the episode before, I was like, when can you set aside in your own home like a 3 hour period to watch a movie? Like that, like I guess at late home, at night maybe.
Yeah, night.
But I mean, just like from 1 to 4, like that's a big, like yeah, no, just time of night. Your afternoon.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't up. Have a child.
I often stop movies yeah. halfway through. Like I watched Love and Toro, which was like 2 hours 20, and I watched it over a couple nights.
2 hours 20. What are?
Yeah, it's like
how do you describe?
I can watch it's only it's only like the first two acts of Avengers Endgame. There's a whole.
I just think the idea of people watching their phone to wait for an app to like give them a notification
lame.
While they're in the theater is
that's
like, come on. Like,
what's your number one, Nick?
My number one is a military man who was just trying to get, you know, he went on some missions. A lot of them, they're for this country. A lot of them were, you know, things go sour on these missions sometimes. And the soldiers... Who die in those missions? Do you know where I'm going?
I hope
the soldiers who die in those missions,
it's gotta be
their families deserve compensation. And when Cold Star families get screwed over like this, somebody needs to take up the mantle to get them their due pay. And Ed Harris on the Rock.
Yep. Yep.
You know he takes a bunch of people hostage in Alcatraz. And then he also steals a bunch of like biochemical warfare weapons and points it at
San Francisco. That's what they're saying. I think it's just
a little redundant to do both. I'm going to say you don't need to take the hostages and hold all of San Francisco.
He wanted to make sure he's covering hostage, his bases.
Hostage with these weapons.
I think it was just shampoo. That's all I'm saying. If you look at the stuff in the glass balls, it just looks like shampoo.
But push comes to shove, you're giving yourself the shot directly in the heart. Just in case, you know, the way medications are delivered, because you don't have tubes in your arms that also go directly to your heart.
Oh, wow.
And like, what if you, like, you never see someone like pull back to make sure they're in a chamber. Mm-hmm. They could just be like injecting it anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, anywhere.
I just like Ed Harris as anybody's number one pick, because I mean, it's Ed Harris.
Snowpiercer could have worked too.
Yeah. Yeah, easily.
Yeah,
that's, man, I forgot that he was the main baddie.
Man,
I need to revisit that one.
I think Truman Show does not count. He's just a villain.
No, he's just flat out.
Oh,
terrible.
Westworld.
Yeah, Westworld.
Yep. Kind of maybe.
But anyways,
you're saying whether or not he's a.
I would say
so because for me,
not
that
in
whole,
the Truman Show. Yeah,
no, not the Truman Show.
Not the Truman
Westworld.
Show.
Maybe
Westworld. Yeah, I would say
because it's all coming from like. I empathize, but I don't agree with it all.
Right.
Like, okay, you're. I don't want to spoil it.
There's a few HBO villains that I thought about including. Mm-hmm. I mean, Snoop, Chris Partlow. Like,
where's that from?
From The Wire.
I get to see The Wire.
They're in a similar situation as Benny. You feel like? I've been watching a lot of Sopranos supercuts lately, and there's probably some people from there too. That sure. Are like, Bobby Bacala. I mean,
come on.
A lot of those, you know, individuals who are born into the families, you would say like that's how you were. That's your nature and nurture.
It's a hard thing, though. Yeah.
How would you get away
from that? You know.
Anyways, Ed Harris in The Rock rules. He's really good in it.
He is.
We have a review on our show. This is from AM Judge 01. Is that Aaron Judge, the baseball player?
Probably.
Or is it someone who is a judge? They're saying, I am Judge 01. It'd be cool if it was Aaron Judge.
A judge that only works in the mornings?
Yeah.
Oh, AM Judge. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Like, AM Judge in the morning, is Judy in the afternoon.
And he's at least the second person with that, so he had to put like 01.
Yeah, 01. And they say, 5 stars, love it. I find the show really relaxing. That's good, I guess.
And we need to scream more. Make it less relaxing.
And love listening to the hosts talk about TV shows, movies, video games, and more. By more, I think they mean soup. If you're a pop culture nerd, this is an excellent show to listen to. I don't want to get into soup. I don't have time for it.
I did have a good soup yesterday.
Okay, I want to hear it because I just haven't had any soups recently.
Tom Kha, I got it from.
Is it that coconut?
It's
is it
a Thai soup? Yeah, I hadn't had it before.
Coconut soup?
Lime soup.
Oh,
oh
yeah.
My god, mushrooms, chicken.
Where'd you get it?
It's called Leah, and I'm not confident I'm pronouncing that right. However, it's Lyeh. Leah, carry out in Akron.
I'll have to check it out.
Oh yeah,
I go to papaya salad and
oh man, they're good. Yeah,
they Cobb got Falls the, all the time.
Is that good
salad?
I love it.
We always make a joke about it because in Cuba.
Yep.
Did Nelly tell you this, or were you there when we were?
Yep.
Papaya is a slang term for female anatomy.
Mm. Yeah.
So, anyways.
Anyway.
Anyhow.
Coconut is one of those things where I hate it in desserts, but when it's like savory, like coconut shrimp, coconut soup, coconut curry.
Well, it's because they always put those little flakes in it in desserts. I don't want like little chewy slivers.
Oh, I'm all about that. Are you guys out of your minds?
What? You're about that slivers?
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah. I got you. Oh, I got you, Tommy.
No. I'm all about
I just salty. Want the flavor.
Yeah.
There's a new show on Netflix like called Street Foods. And it's all Asian, so we watched the Thai one yesterday, and they talked about not the same soup, but tom yum soup.
Yeah, it's similar. It's a similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man. I want to go to soups. I want to go to Bangkok and just eat all the stuff they made. A crab omelet.
Whoosh.
Crab omelet. Yeah. I wish. That's one thing about Akron, Ohio. Is there's not enough street food.
Yeah.
By not enough, I mean
that's true.
There's no street food.
Yeah.
Anyways, if you have your own anti-villain.
Thank you, by the way, for AM Judge 01.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, thank you for the review. If you want to review us, too, you can do so at iTunes or, I don't know, wherever you got this.
That helps us out the most.
Yeah, wherever you got this, you can review us and let us know if it's, like, we don't get notifications or anything about it. So if you do it, let us know and we'll give you a shout out for sure. Mm-hmm. If you want to learn more about anti-villains, you can do so at TV Tropes. You can let us know what we missed at facebook.com/onthetropes, on Twitter, or at onthetropes@gmail.com. You can get our loot at redbubble.com/people/onthetropes, and you can support us at patreon.com/onthetropes. And thank you to enemy of the show, friend of the show, and co-host of the show, Eva, for recommending anti-villain. She didn't give us a list, though. I should have asked her. I didn't think to ask her, but anyway, she knows where to find us. I've been Nick.
I've been Sir.
Demo.
And Kyle.
And join us again next week. I don't know. I don't think we have time.
We should have time.
I don't know.
That was quick.
All right. Bye.